We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, Nets coming off a big win over the Clippers, 124-120. How are we doing, Jack?
Trade Kyrie Irving, make him retire, do whatever it takes. Stephen A. Smith was right, Nick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that type of take, obviously, after tonight, you can't even think that was real. You know, Kyrie Irving was just dynamic, and he was super clutch, and he hit some amazing shots in this game. Before we jump into that, quick reminder, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including otgbasketball.com, netsrepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, where do we start?
I mean, we start with Kyrie Irving, Nick. It's simple as that. And we heard the other day, I believe it was Stephen A. Smith saying that Kyrie Irving is taking too many shots. And while he took too many, he took 10 more shots than Kevin Durant tonight and 8 more shots than James Harden tonight. He also scored 39 points, was 15 of 23 from the field, 6 of 8 from 3, 3 of 3 from the line, had 5 boards, couple of dimes here, couple of blocks, looked decent defensively, and a steal. I mean, how can you criticize Kyrie Irving? I mean, you can criticize him in certain instances, as we have on this podcast, but that slander must go, surely, after tonight's performance.
Yeah, I mean, he stepped up in a huge way, and just on so many different levels. You know, the game really didn't start in his favor. Missed a couple shots early on. Defensively, they were really attacking him. Kawhi was getting a lot of switches on him, and he couldn't really do much just given the size differential, but throughout the game, just started heating up, hitting all of his shots, and defensively, the effort really turned up, and I think communication with his teammates did too. And, you know, in that fourth quarter, he was pretty much matching whatever type of, you know, counter the Clippers had. You know, Kyrie came on the other end of the floor, be it a pull-up three, be it a ridiculous, you know, layup or whatever it might be. I was really impressed with Kyrie, and I think this is also a matchup where he can excel, because you look at the Clippers, and their two elite defenders are really Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, and that's more of the wing forward type instead of the guard type. So, hey, you want to put Kawhi and Kevin Durant? Cool. We have two other superstars we can go to. Oh, you want to put Paul George on James Harden? Okay, well, Kyrie's going to cook Nick Batum or Reggie Jackson or whoever you throw at him.
It's insane, the bevy of riches, as we've alluded to on this part. And Kyrie Irving himself says he's, and this is why Matt Brooks says he catches himself watching the stars around him, that they're that great. This is what the big three is for, Nick. This is why we traded for James Harden, because of the effect of not only his immense talents and what he brings to the team, but also the counter effect that it gives Kevin Durant the extra space. It allows Kyrie to cook. And they have, you know, there aren't many teams in the league that have three amazing defenders that are going to be able to stop or nullify our big three. It's pretty insane. And, you know,
and we've probably already seen two of the teams that have those defenders, Jack, and the Clippers and the Bucks. And obviously Kyrie didn't play in that Bucks game, but like, how many other teams really can throw good defenders at the Nets?
Let me check, Nick. Did the Nets win both of those games?
They did, Jack. And, you know,
okay, if just checking
my notes, I think they've beaten every good team they faced.
Yeah, it's just the sub 500 team. They turn into they turn into the Washington Wizards or the Detroit Pistons. But yeah, that we're not talking about the bad stuff today. We're in a good mood on the TBB today on the Brooklyn Buzz. But in saying that, Nick, what was your favorite Kyrie Irving shot from tonight? And what was favorite moment? Because there were a lot of people raving about some of his defensive acumen, his defensive engagement. Give me some highlight moments from Kyrie Irving tonight for those who weren't lucky enough to see him, live in action.
Okay, probably my favorite move, and you can find this on my Twitter feed at OTG Nick, is he went left, he rejected a screen with a spin move, hit him with a crossover, and then went into a step back three. And I believe this is all on Reggie Jackson. It was just a combination of all of it together was just immense. Like, one of the moves by itself would probably be a highlight play, and the fact he did all three in a combo series, it was just insane. It kind of like reminded me of like those kids when you're playing like Mortal Kombat when you're younger, and the one kid has all the combos memorized with the button mashing, and then all of a sudden it's like the final finale, and that's what Kyrie does. Like, it's always some series of moves, and it's just amazing.
Finish him. Kyrie.
I feel like Kyrie felt like that a couple times tonight, and KD probably felt like that with his dagger three, which kind of was a dagger three, but almost at the same time wasn't because of Clippers.
I mean, yeah, Kevin Durant was 11 of 13 from the field tonight. We'll get to him in a little bit. That's just dumb, man. Like, both of these dudes are stupid. James Harden is a stupid passer as well. But in staying on Kyrie Irving, I was lucky enough to see a little bit of the game today interspersed through parts of work. And one of the crossovers that he has such pace on his crossover and the handle. And because he has such a tight handle, and maybe the tightest and best, other than maybe Allen Iverson in league history, it allows him to get such separation. He has such quickness. I think that's an underrated part of his game. And he's so quick in his mind. He's an underrated athlete, it seems to me, Nick.
Yeah, I think he uses pace really well, and it's kind of almost like a sneaky burst. You know what I mean? Because it's like he's lulling you to sleep, and then all of a sudden, just one step, pop, and he gets to a spot. And you saw that a lot tonight, like you said, Jack. I think he is an underrated athlete, and I think he came into camp in really good shape this year, and a couple people have noted that, and I think that's paying off in the court.
Tell me a little bit about his defense tonight, Nick. As I alluded to, 2 blocks and 1 steal. He led the team in blocks. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, the first 2 to 3 minutes of the game, it was rough. It was like rough defense. And some of that was Kyrie. Some of that was just the Clippers getting the switch. And the Nets were switching easily. And Kawhi's just going to cook any guard in the elbow area. You know what I mean? He's pretty much shooting how Kevin Durant shoots when no one's out there. And that's what Kawhi can do. But the Nets kind of worked past that. Were able to send more attention later in the game. And, in that second quarter, they just picked up that effort level. And then Kyrie started fighting over screens. And Nets started mixing up some of their coverages. And the effort level was just really there. You know what I mean? Just active hands and just kind of a menace. And we've seen this at different points, and we've talked about it. Hey, we know Kyrie can play at a high level. He just doesn't do it on a regular basis. And tonight was just one of those high level games defensively where he put in the effort, and he's never going to have the body type to be a lockdown defender. But if he plays with this level of activity and communication, and the other Nets know what they're doing, the Nets will be fine come playoff time or finals time.
Yeah, I mean, in saying that, we've alluded to on many podcasts and other people have as well, and we decided to ponder the topic a little bit ourselves. Is Kyrie Irving or DeAndre Jordan the weak link in this defensive lineup? And obviously, the Nets have been one of the worst defensive teams of all time and the best defensive teams of all time in the James Harden stretch, the scary hour stretch of Nets basketball. But Kyrie Irving himself, the other night saying against Washington Wizards that I couldn't guard a stick. Tonight, he mentioned to Matt Brooks in the Nets media, the other night against Washington, he went MJ mode. I took that personal. Not being able to guard anyone. So I think it's similar to you, Nick, that I'm not necessarily as worried about the really, really bad performances, because when the Nets turn it on, they are one of the best teams in the league. And it's the best teams show a level of consistency. And the Nets, while they're still second in the East, they should be better. And some of that is due to defense, lack of consistency on and off the court, coaching and the rest of it. You can't deny that at their best, the Brooklyn Nets are a true championship contender. And if they can lock in defensively and some of their weaknesses, in Kyrie Irving and such, are able to step up like they did tonight for a playoff stretch, then there's no reason why they can't be in the championship race.
Yeah, I think objectively, if you watched every single Nets game this season, you would know that the Nets are able to at least play a competent level of defense. And with the offensive talent they have, that should be enough. I think what the Nets want, what Steve Nash wants, what Kevin Durant wants, and he mentioned, I think, in one of his quotes after the game, is they want to be a good defensive team because you want to have those habits developed. You know what I mean? You don't want to turn on your defense. You want to play good defense all the time, and then when it comes to the postseason, you can turn it to another level. I think right now the Nets have the ability to play good defense. They want to turn it up to another level, and we've seen flashes and stretches of great communication, great activity, and great effort, but it's just not a consistent stretch. And when we get that consistently, in which we hope to see in the playoffs, like you said, Jack, no reason the Nets should be nervous about anything, because even at the end of the day, if their defense isn't up to par, like the fact that they can attack mismatches at the efficiency that they can, other teams can't do that. Even if the Nets are as bad as they are defensively, you know what I mean? In certain stretches, yeah, like their offense is so much more efficient than other teams. And we see that night after night. It's just more so about the effort on the defensive end. And like I said, you know, you said it too, like they can play at a high level. It's just not done consistently.
Yeah, Joe on the last pod said that, you know, the Nets 14th or 15th would be good enough. I'll throw something at you, Nick. Do you think that the Nets can be an historical aberration and be, say, 18th to 22nd or 25th defensively, but be that amazing offensively, a la what the Detroit Pistons were in their, like, heyday when they won the championship as a defensive anomaly? Do you think the Nets can be an offensive anomaly and win a championship and defy the historical odds?
I think they could. You know, I wouldn't, you know, necessarily bet on it, but I think they could, given they're a historic roster. You know what I mean? Like the shot making we saw in this game with these three players just kind of is a perfect example of like, damn, like what do we do? There was a stretch where I think James Harden hit a step back, Kyrie was in his bag doing a couple moves, and then KD hit like a dagger three at the top. It's just like all of those things, there's not really much the defense can do. So I think the Nets could win in that 22-18 stretch, but I'd also want it to be kind of what we're seeing now. We're like, hey, they played the Clippers, they showed some good defense. They played the Bucks, they showed some good defense. Oh, they played the Wizards and they played terrible and showed no effort. All right, that's going to bring the defensive rating down. You know what I mean? I don't think it consistently be bad, but if it's really sporadic and it lacks context, okay, that makes sense. They can win a championship like that. And I think I also don't want to, you know, underestimate the Lakers as well.
No, absolutely not. I mean, the Nets are in there with a chance. Obviously, we are in February and championships aren't won in February. But yeah, it just made me think, because the Nets offense is that good and historically good. And obviously, the talent, as you alluded to, there isn't a greater offensive trio in the history of the game. And yes, the fit, Klay Thompson, and yes, you know, the Boston Celtics of old. But I think offensively, talent-wise, we saw tonight that there aren't as three great individually collective, just amazing players as what the Brooklyn Nets have right now. So it's why I do ponder that. And also, Nick, I think in saying that, it'd be interesting to see, like, if we had some access to, like, Synergy or Clean the Glass and such, if we were to analyze what the Nets' defensive rating was against, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Los Angeles Clippers, these great teams, and then compare that to what it is and sort of have it as an anomaly and sort of compare the pair. And even to me, what I'll be looking for is what is in the final month and a half of the season, the final month or two of the season post All-Star break, which is stupid enough that we're going to be having one of those. But in saying that, I think I'll be analyzing what is the Nets defense from March to May, or March, whenever the regular season does end. Because that, to me, it'll be like, okay, the Nets are switched on now. Their sets are in. Their schemes are in place. Their communication is on. Are we one of the top 10 defenses from March to May? That, to me, will be a greater indicator of postseason success.
Yeah, and I think they'll have a great opportunity to work towards that with this first half stretch. You know what I mean? And I'm not even sure they need top 10. Like, I'd probably think top 15 is okay given the offensive efficiency of this team, long as they're able to just make teams have to earn buckets. You know what I mean? And I think they did that at different points of tonight. And that's really important. Just kind of just like not make it easy, because like we talked about a million times, like the offensive talent here is crazy. And not only do they have, you know, the elite shot makers in Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden, they also have an elite spacer in Joe Harris, and another guy who fits great too in Jeff Green, just providing, you know, even more spacing and versatility for that lineup.
No doubt about that. I don't doubt that at all. It's just, you know, if for say the first 3 months of the season or so, the Nets continue to stay, what is it, 25th or whatever the heck it is on defense, but in the last stretch of the season, they're 10th, and then it balances out to be like 19th, slightly outside of my 8th, or 23rd, slightly outside of my 18 to 22 range. I don't think that number should be okay.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Nets can't win the championship. I think we need to have a bit more nuance to it. And, you know, it's the, as Kevin Durant loves to say, you know, who wants to have stats when you're talking hoops, especially with this team? But
too, is the context of, like you kind of mentioned earlier, like the defensive rating against the good teams. Like if they just beat all the good teams and they have these weird nights where they blow games against the Wizards, yeah, it'll be annoying. But at the end of the day, you know what carries more value. A win like tonight carries way more value than a loss like against Washington, where the Nets just really didn't show up on one end of the floor.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Was this the best win of the season, Nick?
To me, it was the most valuable win of the season. I think there's probably maybe other enjoyable ones. I think opening night was really enjoyable and James Harden's first game or the win over the Bucks. But this in terms of, hey, the Clippers have the best record in the league. They have star power essentially to match the Nets, or at least to some extent with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And the Nets were able to kind of push them down to the fourth quarter in a close game. And they really were off to a rough start and they didn't necessarily play their best game of basketball. I think they played a good second half and they were still able to beat this team. So it gave me a lot of confidence. And even like I said, you know, the fact that this team has Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and some other really good defenders, it didn't matter in the fourth quarter because the Nets are just that good offensively.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was that 13-0 stretch before the, and you know, Kyrie Irving was just incredible in that stretch as well. Joe Harris hitting clutch buckets off, and James Harden leading the second unit and keeping it really, really steady as he has done for large stretches of late as well. But Nick, who do you think was the second best performer tonight? You know, obviously Kevin Durant, 11-13 from the field, 5-5 from the line, 28 points, 9 boards from him, whereas James Harden continues to rack up those dimes like no one else, 14 assists to go with 23 points and 11 boards. He's been rebounding incredibly well for the team. And was it the Slim Reaper or was it the beard?
Yeah, it's really tough. I think James was probably a little bit more consistent throughout the game, where KD had a couple bad stretches with 5 turnovers. You know, some of that was just sloppy in the first quarter. I think not necessarily used to the pressure of an elite defender like Kawhi. But I think throughout the game, Kevin Durant was just extremely efficient, and he also was able to slow down Kawhi Leonard. You know, his contest on Kawhi, I think, were really crucial in this game because KD is so tall, and we know Kawhi is a line drive shooter. So there was a couple plays where I definitely feel like KD impacted Kawhi's shot to the point where he missed a shot because KD was closing at him that hard. So I'd have to give KD the nod because the Nets needed that extra defensive push, and I think they got it from KD.
No, I think that I've said before that Kevin Durant might be Brooklyn's most important defender / best defender. And, you know, when you are going up against one of the 3-4 best players in the league in Kawhi Leonard, one of the best postseason performers in recent years, you know, you're going to need to have quality defense. And he's really stepped up. And Kevin Durant's length, as you alluded to, he's a great man-to-man defender. He's still improving his help defense. I think that's just going to come with the reps. But he is so damn important. And he's going to be so damn important, come the rest of the season, the postseason. And hopefully we can alleviate that burden on him a little bit. But in saying that, Nick, I got an interesting quote from Mr. Excuses himself, Pandemic P. He says, "I think it was disrespectful. I only had one free throw attempt." Sorry if I got a bit loud there for the listeners. "I'm going to leave it at that." Was Paul George disrespected by the refs tonight, Nick? Because it seems to me that watching the game, He was just settling for shots. And the Nets were the one that were pushing the pace, especially early on. James Harden, Kyrie Irving really trying to get inside, and they were getting the calls. What do you think about playoff, way off P's comments there?
Yeah, I think it's just an excuse. You know, Kawhi had 9 free throw attempts.
Wait, Paul George is coming up with excuses, Nick. I've never heard this in my life. He's never blamed the coach. He's never blamed the refs before. It's very out of character. Sorry, just needed to say that.
Yeah, never heard PG complain about anything. No, like you said, though, Jack, it's just the fact that he was shooting floaters. He was shooting mid-range shots. He was playing finesse, you know, and that's the difference. Kawhi plays physical. He's always going to get calls because he's creating contact on a regular basis, and I thought a lot of the Nets players did that as well. So Paul George can complain about it all he wants. I think this was kind of a game where they let the players play. You know what I mean? Like, there was definitely calls they didn't call in this game. And you're like, okay, whatever. It's going to be that type of game. And I think that's okay. And people can live with that. So Paul George obviously isn't one of them.
Is this, and we'll move on from Pandemic P. We don't need to give him any more airtime. Yeah, we might get a Los Angeles Clippers on the OTG podcast network at some stage. But in saying that, Nick, there's a really good quote here from Kyrie Irving. And he said this. This is via Black Trey, Trayvon Edwards of The Athletic. It's great to have Kevin Durant yell at you to be in the right spot. Man, it shouldn't make me so happy to see and read that. But why? I don't know why it does.
I mean, I think it's great, and I think it also gives accountability to different star players that maybe it's hard to do with different role players, because these guys are at the same level of extreme or obsession that you are about your craft. You know what I mean? If KD's telling you something, there's definitely a reason why, and I think you understand that he's either your peer or he's better than you, and he's trying to help you win. So I think it's going to benefit Kyrie, it's going to benefit James Harden, it's also going to benefit Kevin Durant, and hopefully it can benefit some of the other guys too, just having that type of basketball IQ around. And I think even to an extent, maybe benefit Steve Nash. You know what I mean? Like, he has to be on his P's and Q's because these are really, really smart basketball players.
Oh, incredibly smart. And I wanted to ask you, Nick, in relation to Steve Nash, we were sort of going back and forth before we started recording, looking at one of the final plays of the game where Kawhi Leonard was at the line, and we saw Steve Nash mouthing some instructions or reiterating some instructions to James Harden and Jeff Green. Do you want to talk us through that for those that weren't lucky enough to see it?
Yeah, so the Nets obviously had an inbound play. They've struggled with an inbound play in the previous game. So what they did here... yeah, slightly. It might have just cost them the win. But what they did here is, I believe they had James Harden as the inbounder. You had Kyrie and KD at the bottom, closest to Harden by the baseline, you know, moving around. Then you had Joe Harris, I believe, at half court, and Jeff Green as well on that end of the floor. And I think Joe Harris, either intentionally or unintentionally, kind of sets a screen for Jeff Green, and he streaks to the other end of the court, so he's completely by himself, and the Clippers are trying to obviously force a turnover to have an opportunity to win. James Harden does his best, you know, NFL quarterback impression, steps back, throws the pass, connects, and gets the and one on Jeff Green for the hoop, which is a big deal because he ended up missing the free throw too. But I think it was just some smart basketball plays from them, understanding what the Clippers wanted to do and where they would be weak and where the Nets could capitalize, especially with the amount of attention a guy like Kyrie and Kevin Durant get.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Yaya Dubin, J.A. Dubin 5, Jared Dubin, who does a lot of great work in relation to the NBA, post the video. And you can see Steve Nash, you know, mouthing to Jeff Green and pointing, you know, run, you know, move, that sort of thing. So we give Steve Nash a lot of criticism, and he's got a lot. I heard on a podcast earlier in the week that the Nets made the wrong decision in hiring him. But look, this is, he's had 20 games as a head coach, and you know, he should be better in certain instances in the inbounds play. Any ACO plays, the Nets should be phenomenal in closing game stretches. Steve Nash is a mastermind, and he should be able to impact in that fashion. But we saw him do it tonight, so there is continued growth for him. He's not the best coach in the NBA, but he's a rookie coach at the same time. So this little thing that we saw from him, and for those that, you know, again, check out the video, re-listen to what Nick alluded to there. He broke it down really perfectly. So loving the leadership and the impact from Steve Nash here. And, you know, I think that his man management style, his emotional intelligence style, his strengths, this is where they really should come to the fore in these games where the superstars are able to go, all right, I'm going to impact here. But here is where I can have a little bit of nuance and go, you know what?
Yep.
I know something you guys can cheekily do here. Lay a bit of an off screen. Jeff's going to be open no matter what. I know all about getting double teams and such. I know what happened the other night. It shows growth. And you know, you learn from your mistakes. We've seen Steve Nash do that. And he might have had one at the start of the game in not starting DeAndre Jordan. We can touch on that a little bit afterwards, Nick. But Steve Nash overall is going to have his mistakes. He's going to have his pluses. As long as he's doing the right things at the important times, it impacts winning. We've seen it.
Yeah, I think there was a situation, even if it was a drawn up play or was something he told Jeff Green to do in the situation, I think it kind of displays his basketball instincts. You know what I mean? Like understanding what's going to happen in the situation. It's the closest he can be to a point guard. And I think that's also where he kind of feels the most comfortable because it's almost natural to him. And maybe it's something that's going to come more as, you know, the season progresses and he gets into his role. I think we've talked about at times he's too hands off, where he needs to be a little bit more hands on. Like, you're Steve Nash. Like, you're a smart guy. You know what you're doing in the basketball court. I don't think you have to worry about stepping on toes. And I think as he gets more comfortable and more confident in the role, I think we'll see maybe more of these moments.
Definitely, definitely. Nick, we'll touch on James Harden now. And he had, you know, these quotes to Matt Brooks and the Nets media in relation to coming from Houston to Brooklyn. Just coming to this team, leading the league and scoring the last couple of years, not many players can change up their game. I try to impact the game in multiple ways. For me, Nick, this is going to be weird to say, maybe the best highlight of James Harden's performance tonight was that post defense on Kawhi Leonard. He didn't move. Kawhi didn't move, and Kawhi is strong as hell and an incredible post player. That was insane. That strength and center of gravity is something else.
Yeah, I think James Harden is one of the most underrated players in terms of strength in the NBA. Like, we consistently talk about his post defense being able to hold bigs. Like, he's not a weak player. Like you said, strong center of gravity, gets low, uses leverage, and he has a decent upper body. You know, a lot of people are going to call him fluffy, but a lot of it is muscle. Like, you see guys bounce off him when he's driving to the rim on a regular basis. So, really impressive play. I mean, I love the passing from James Harden. You know, 14 assists. We talk about it a lot. He's going to end up leading the league in assists most likely this season. And he's, you know, consistently trying to find his rhythm and with this team. And tonight his three ball was off, but he was still able to have a really nice game.
Definitely. You know, Nick, in saying that, I think, you know, we've brought up on the podcast before that, you know, is he going to lead the league in assists? It's seeming increasingly likely that is going to be the case. If he does, is that going to surprise you? Because the big question mark about James Harden, and he sort of said himself, you know, about the changing role, was, you know, is he going to be more than a scorer? Can he play beyond just James Harden heliocentric basketball? We've seen that and then some. I didn't have these doubts. I actually thought that his passing game would be good. I didn't think he'd lead the league in assists, but I might have been a question I've asked you before, but continuing to see this trend as James Harden, the point guard, are you surprised at this sort of acclimation from score-first player to maybe even pass-first player?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not super surprised. I think especially after we saw the first couple games of how he played with his team and he was a little bit more passive and more so playing that point guard role. And I mean, his first couple years in Houston, he was either leading the league in assists or he was top three. He was less of a scorer and more of that playmaker role, throwing a lot of lobs to Clint Capella. So I think he's getting back to being more of that all-around player. I think KD had a nice quote about that too after the game.
Yeah, KD's had some great quotes. I actually wanted to touch on a couple of them, Nick. Now, two of them, and I guess both of them kind of relate to defense. I'll touch on this one first. He said, we can't rely on shooting 50% from the field in games. They shot 20 more shots than us, he told Nets media and Matt Brooks. Now, that is truly insane. The Nets had 79 shots and the Los Angeles Clippers had 99 shots and they still won the game. That's truly, absolutely crazy. Now, how does that happen, Nick? Sorry, I'm just a bit bewildered.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, Jack. I did not pass by that stat when I was, you know, preparing for the show. So I'm a little surprised by it, too. And I mean, I think a big situation is probably the turnover, 16-8. That's going to make a big difference there.
17-8 it has for me on ESPN, Nick. So I'm not sure if NBA is different.
Yeah, NBA.com has 16-8. So, you know, something along those lines, I think.
Double the amount of turnovers either way, double or more. That's and look, were those live ball turnovers, Nick? Did they, obviously they didn't hurt too much in the long run, but what were the type of turnovers for those who didn't watch the game, I guess?
Yeah, some of them were just careless turnovers that were dumb, as we've kind of seen from the Nets. And some of them were like, hey, you know, Kawhi Leonard is on the other team. Like, he had four steals tonight, and some of them were just gifts to him. You know, Joe Harris threw him a pass, Landry Shamet threw him a pass, and it's like, guys, it's Kawhi Leonard. He's one of the best defenders in the league. So I think it was also the Nets kind of reacting to playing some really good defenders in, you know, Los Angeles.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And look, at the end of the day, in terms of points off turnovers, it almost cost us 22 points off those 17 turnovers, whereas the Nets got 8 off the Los Angeles Clippers, 8 turnovers themselves. So you got it's something that needs to be fixed up a little bit, but at the end of the day, the most important stat is that the Nets got the win. So that's all that really matters to me at the end of the day. But there was a stretch in the second quarter, Nick, where the Nets really turned up, because it was a bit of a slow start. You know, the offense, the defense, it was all a little bit sloppy and a lack of engagement and execution. And Kevin Durant said that during a second quarter timeout, that the message was, man up, make them shoot over the top, don't help too much. Did those things happen in the last 2.5 quarters of the game?
Yeah, I think so. I think the effort defensively and on-ball defense was a lot better, because to start this game, it was like literally a carousel. Like, they were just, you know, passing the Nets defenders one by one, just getting to the rim, getting the shots they wanted to. And the Nets also didn't have any center in the games with starting Jeff Green, so there was no rim protection behind them. So it was a lot of easy buckets where Kawhi getting to the free throw line. I felt like, you know, mid in that second quarter, late in the second quarter, and in the second half, they really started to pick up defensively, showing more effort and not helping too much. I think they were kind of in the first half helping too much in different situations. Then all of a sudden, Nicholas Batum wide open three, or Paul George, or whoever it was. And then more in the second half, they were able to get better closeouts where, hey, I'm taking a step to give you some help, but you still have to do your job on ball. And that gives me the ability to still recover to my guy and at least, you know, hit him with a good closeout. It's not necessarily going to stop it or contest a shot to the highest extent, but at least we're putting pressure on them. And I think that was a big difference from what we saw early in the game.
Yeah, it's going to have to be a consistent factor against some of these really, really good teams. The Clippers are one of the form teams of the NBA, and to get this win, despite not playing, you know, four quarters of quality defense, shows that the Nets can turn it on, and their offense can be truly overwhelming, even to some of the best teams. And the Clippers haven't been great defensively this season. I think that's gone under the radar, funnily enough. You know, they've actually been, you know, I think 18th or 21st, somewhere around that range throughout the season. So, and obviously,
people only care when the Nets don't play good defense, Jack.
Look, it's a fun narrative, and look, the Bucks haven't been great either. It's very, very strange that to be mentioning the Clippers and the Bucks as some of the worst half in the league defensively. But, you know, we know the Nets problems there. We analyze them quite consistently, and you broke it down pretty succinctly for us there as well, my friend. But Nick, on the boards, I remember I got a chance to watch the first quarter, as I talked about earlier. And early on in the first quarter, the Clippers were leading 13-6. Now, the Nets eventually got that ascendancy by the end of the game, winning the boards battle 44-39. And mainly through the defensive glass, 38-28, were out-rebounded 11-6 offensively. How did that adjustment, was that problem purely because DJ wasn't starting?
Yeah, I think some of it too, Jack, is just math. You know, the just missing and making shots. You know what I mean? Yeah. The Clippers had 20 more shots. They shot 45% from the field. The Nets had 20 less shots, and they shot 57% from the field. There's just going to be more defensive rebounds for the Nets to grab. You know what I mean? They didn't get necessarily killed on the boards. There was different situations where they weren't great. And like you said, to start the game, not having DeAndre Jordan out there did hurt at certain points. Serge Ibaka was able to capitalize. But overall, I don't think it was the biggest differential in the game. I think sometimes, like when we look at the rebounding, I think some of it is just math.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point to sort of allude to. I think the offensive glass is one stat that, you know, the Nets have often dominated in season. But in the Jared Allen era, Jared Allen DJ era, especially because Jared Allen is, and he's doing great things in Cleveland, fam, my dude. Shout out to Alfredo, the Alfredo King.
First Cavs player to ever score 23 points, have 18 rebounds, and block 5 shots.
Dude, it's crazy what he's doing, man. He's going to earn a nice big paycheck. Good for him. We love Jared Allen on this pod. And he will always have a big spot in our hearts, even though he should be playing for this team and he should be in the black and white. But in saying that, Nick, what else were the keys to the game? Was it basically just the overwhelming offense in the closing, you know, I guess, quarter and a half? Was it just Kyrie Irving being Kyrie Irving and just being the special, unique talent that he is?
Yeah, I think they were able to turn up their defensive effort enough to slow down the Clippers, and then their offense was able to catch fire, and the combination of that is going to beat probably any team in the league. You know what I mean? Like we kind of mentioned earlier, if they're playing at least competent level defense, forcing a couple turnovers, forcing a couple bad shots, playing with effort, offensively things are really going to take care of themselves. And they started this game off really poorly from three, and they ended up shooting 41% from the field. I want to say, I'm going to look at my Twitter real quick because I have the number, so talk about
Do
another
it,
point.
No, I was just going to say, you know, and look, 13 of 31, we had, of course, Kyrie Irving being absolute flamethrowers there, 6 of 8. My boy Joey Buckets, 3 of 7. Jeff Green wasn't his normal hot self. KD was 1 of 1. James Harden, like you mentioned earlier, 1 of 6. TLC hit 1. Landry Shamet missed both of his shots from there. It's a make or miss league, as it's often said, but I would be very surprised you know, the Nets sometimes can just, you know, have a hot quarter where Kyrie Irving hits five in a row and they happen to go, you know, 8 of 10 in a quarter. And it's just like, oh, they're suddenly 40% from the field rather than being 15% from the perimeter. It's the amount of, and especially when you're starting the five-man lineup that has Jeff Green at the five and they play a lot of that lineup quite consistently, you know, you have a five-out lineup, which is, you know, how do you defend that on the perimeter?
Yeah, and to give you the stat, they started the game 4 of 15.
So 4 of 15, and then they finished with 9 of 16. So they went 15 over 50%. You know, maybe even 55%. Trying to do the math in my head. I am a teacher, but I don't turn my brain on very often for this podcast.
Goes to show, Jack, the difference in terms of just the offensive output. Like, it's a miss and make league, and I thought they did miss some shots earlier that they typically hit, and they kind of get closer back to the percentages, and I think this is going to be a number that they can hit to close to every game. We talked about it. The three-point percentages is going to be high for this team because they just have so many good three-point shooters. There's a good chance that at least one of them is going to be hot, and the guy that was hot tonight was Kyrie for 6 of 8.
Yeah, and look, Joe Harris, 3-7 ain't too bad either. But yeah, I think that you are quite consistently going to have at least one or two guys be hot from the field. And even if James Harden is poor, Jeff Green is poor, Landry Shamet is poor, you have a bevy of riches of perimeter shooting that many teams would be very jealous to have. And the Nets aren't really... I mean, I'd have to look this set up, and I can in a little bit, but they don't, they're not a Utah Jazz sort of team where they just throw up 40, 45, 50 shots from the perimeter consistently. There seems to be a balance, and in terms of, because we have such great mid-range shooters and three-level shooters, as we often allude to on the pod, that they don't necessarily just settle for those shots.
Yeah, I think it depends on the game. I think they've had nights where they definitely settle, but when they're at their best, I think, like you said, Jack, they're that three-level scoring. They're, hey, I'm getting to the rim, I'm mixing in some mid-rangers, and then we're taking advantage of the three-point shots. I think also, like, certain teams are going to prevent you from getting some of those shots. Like, looking, like you mentioned, KD being only 1 of 1 from three, credit to Kawhi Leonard. Like, he was not coming off Kevin Durant for helping on any situation in this game.
Yeah, you can't. Kawhi Leonard is a... You can't. Both of these guys are MVP caliber players. It's great to have them both healthy with LeBron James, because to me they've been the three best players in the modern era, and it's great to have them all fit and firing. And hopefully it stays that way heading into the postseason. For the record, Nick, via B-ball reference, I'm not sure if it includes tonight's game. Nets are second in 3-point percentage at over 40%, 40.1, and 10th in 3-pointers attempted. So certainly a high-ish volume at around 37 a game. But it's about that percentage. They're taking good shots and they're making them. And Joe Harris is doing that as well, and Kyrie Irving and all of our superstars. And, you know, Landry Shamet was a bit cold tonight, but he's been a little bit better of late as well. Same with TLC. But yeah, I think the 3-point shooting is going to be a stat that I think sticks out for the Brooklyn Nets, because they are just so stacked in that department.
Yep, 100%. And talk about three-point shooting, I think, talk about Joe Harris. You know, 13 points, 5-11 from the field, 3-7 from three, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. You know, fought a lot in this game defensively, showing high effort, had some good plays. And I think they got him a little bit more involved with the second unit at times. And like you kind of mentioned earlier, James Harden leading that unit has allowed Joe to be utilized at different points, because there definitely is periods in the game where you not forget Joe Harris is out there, but he's just not getting touches because it's so star-centric.
And it doesn't matter, because his presence alone, Nick, again, I can't remember which podcast it was where he was like plus 18, plus 16 tonight. No other player was greater than plus 6, and that was DeAndre, plus 8, and that was James Harden himself. Whenever he's on the floor, whether he's shooting or not, you know, he's a winner. He impacts winning basketball just through his presence alone. And while he has had maybe a couple of games where he hasn't been at his 3-point best, you know, it's basically one game, the OKC game. But other than that, you know, James Harden and Joe Harris, I'm loving their synergy in the second unit. And Joe Harris hit, you know, we alluded to Kyrie Irving a lot, and I touched on the Joe Harris shot, but that might one have been the biggest shots of the night to take back the lead from the Los Angeles Clippers, you know, midway through the fourth. It really gave them a little bit of momentum.
Yeah, and we've talked about Joe in the past hitting a lot of clutch threes, but just going back to the James Harden-Joe Harris combo, and we talked about this a lot, that pick and pop that they run, it really just provides a lot of opportunities for the offense to get going, because either they're going to switch and then James Harden's going to get the defender that he wants, or they're going to be late on Joe Harris and either give him an open three or give him some type of advantage where he can drive to the rim, hit his new pull-up mid-range shot, or get to the rim.
It is. It does that. That set alone, Nick. I have some explicit thoughts that you can check out on the OnlyFans page for Joe Harris, but I can't allude to them right now because I am at my current place of work, and I will not allude to those thoughts. But man, that they just have a synergy and an understanding that, you know, they've been teammates for like 15 games, and it feels like they've been teammates for 10 years. You know, there's just a great level of understanding. Nick, I saw someone put out on Twitter about Joe Harris that he should be traded for a defender. Now, his point of attack defense was the point that this person made. And while I didn't disagree with that, we've actually alluded to Joe Harris's improved defense. What was he like on that end of the floor tonight?
Yeah, I thought he was solid. There was a couple times where he got. You know what I mean? Like, he just doesn't have the lateral quickness to defend Paul George in open space, or, you know, Kawhi Leonard's going to be too strong for him. And I think Reggie Jackson might have caught him once, but he at least puts effort and makes them earn the bucket. You know what I mean? And he at least provides an opportunity where a defender could come and help him. And he's not to the point where he's just like Trae Young out there. You know what I mean? Like, there's points where he's pretty good when he at least has somewhat of a size advantage. You know what I mean? The problem is like when the guy's more athletic and he's bigger than him, that's when Joe's going to struggle a little bit, which obviously most people are going to struggle in that situation. But I've actually really liked Joe's ball denial off ball. Like, I think that's something he's pretty good at that we don't really talk about.
Yeah. And there's a video of his days when he was actually in London, when I used to be living there, and he was at a gym talking about, you know, his defensive fundamentals and what he learned at his college at U of A, I think it is. And he was sort of talking about the little things that he does that makes up for his lack of, you know, he's not Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant. He doesn't have the physical gifts that they have. He doesn't have enormous hands and enormous length that they do. But what he does make up for it is effort. And that ball denial is an effort thing, Nick. You know, you can't teach that. You can't be like, you know what, I need you to do this. And some guys can and some guys can't. And I think that level of effort makes up for some of the physical tools that he does lack. And it's an evergreen sort of take that we've provided on this pod. And, you know, he just has really solid fundamentals. You know, his hands are always really good. He's always following and guiding the defender. He's following the ball and making things difficult. And sort of alluding to the things that Kevin Durant was talking about earlier, making them make shots over you and making them get the ball and making it difficult for them rather than sort of letting them. You know, he might get blown by because he doesn't have the lateral quickness of many guys of a couple of guys in this roster. But at the same time, you know, we have pretty good help defense. And hopefully, if the fundamentals and switching are in place, it does cover for that.
Yeah, I think there's only one play that really stuck out where I was like, all right, Joe just needs to be better defensively. It was late in the game, and they were switching, and Joe was just a step late on Paul George, and he hit the three that, you know, allowed the Clippers to get the game close. So it just, I think also, too, getting a little bit more instinctual with the switching defense, which is not something they ran in Brooklyn the last couple of years, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Nick, talk to me. We touched on it a little bit. Jeff Green starting. If hindsight is 2020, would you have started DeAndre Jordan?
I think Jeff Green was fine. I think DeAndre had a solid game because he was matched up with Zubac, and that's like literally a perfect matchup for him. You know what I mean? Like, not fast, doesn't really have much of an offensive game. It's not much of a vertical threat. So I think that benefited DJ. And I think having Jeff Green against Serge Ibaka and having a switchable defender out there was very helpful. Obviously, Jeff Green wasn't great offensively tonight. And I think he was a step slow defensively a couple times. It's kind of hard to tell when they're going against elite talent if it was Jeff Green being slow or Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are just that good. But I also noticed it in the Washington game. I don't know if he's getting a little fatigued, but he's coming out sometimes when he switches a little bit too aggressive, and then he's getting blown by laterally.
Yeah, an extra wing defender would certainly be helpful. That Nicholas Batum guy isn't too bad. no, I don't want to start that again. I started it on Twitter again.
I'd rather see another Nicholas for the Nets.
not bad there. He's much sexier anyway. Got a much better hairstyle and a much better upside. We'll see what Nicholas Claxton can do for this team when he comes back, hopefully sooner rather than later, Nick. But the backups, Nick, it seems to me that when DJ came out there in his 16 minutes, 7 points, 6 boards, a couple of dimes, did have a steal as well, 3 or 4 from the field. Seems like DJ in this limited impact is actually having somewhat of an effect on the game.
Yeah, I thought he was positive in this one. Like I said, really perfect matchup with Zubac. Has a great chemistry with James Harden, even though, you know, DeAndre's not the same athlete he once was. James Harden is able to capitalize with a lot of lobs and manipulating the defense, so I think that works out. And to be honest, and we talked about it before, DJ's not bad if he has the ball at the top of the key. Like, he can still make the easy pass to the front of the rim. Like, I think it was either Joe Harris or Landry Shamet who beat somebody on a backdoor cut, and they were just completely wide open. And some centers are just scared to make that pass. That's something DJ can do. And I'm not saying I want him to run the offense or anything like that, but he's shown to be a capable passer, and we saw that twice tonight.
Yeah, no turnovers from him either. So that's the important thing. As long as he is making the right passes, the easy passes, and not forcing it, you know, taking it out of the hands of James Harden, Kyrie Irving, or whoever else it might be. As long as you are impacting positively, you know, and again, plus six from him. You know, I thought that in this limited effort from him, this is what you want out of DeAndre Jordan. And hopefully we get some Norvell Pell going forward, but it doesn't look like anytime soon. Steve Nash was alluding to that in the pregame presser, sort of saying that the lack of practice time hasn't necessarily allowed him to acclimate and get the reps, get the understanding, which is disappointing because I'm really... Norvell Pell isn't going to solve any of the issues that the Nets do have, but he can provide at least something, another body that can sort of help in the defensive department and provide some athleticism, because I think size and athleticism is a department where the Nets sort of are somewhat weak. You know, if you add in a Jared Allen or maybe a Norvell Pell, you know, a very light version of Jared Allen in that department. But yeah, it'd certainly be nice. And no Reggie Perry tonight either. Either of those guys, Nick, do you think it was the right decision in not playing Reggie Perry? And what are your thoughts, I guess, on Norvell Pell not being able to get his minutes anytime soon?
Yeah, smart move not playing Reggie Perry. I think the rotation Steve Nash had tonight was great. I think Reggie Perry probably gets exposed, just not ready for this level of competition like we saw in the Bucks game. You know what I mean? They were just able to kind of attack him. But with Norvell Pell, I think, like you said, Jack, no practice time. We also have no idea about his conditioning. You know, like, there's a difference in training yourself at home or in gyms and whatever it might be than being with an NBA team. So I think, you know, give him a week, maybe 2 weeks, and the Nets will put him out there. And they also have to see how he plays. Like, obviously, they signed him to play him, but he could get in there and he could just be a terrible fit, and then there's no reason to play him. So I think it's just kind of stuff that we can't really see behind closed doors, especially during a COVID season where you typically have some media at practice or there's more practices because the season isn't so condensed.
Yeah, not everyone is Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant and can just come back and drop 30 on your head after missing a week or two of basketball. Those two are just incredible. But yeah, I'm still hoping for some Norvell Pell action sooner rather than later. And hopefully they do get some practice time. And there are some small breaks coming forward after this little bit of a stretch of basketball. So fingers crossed we do see that. Nick, out of the backups, TLC, Landry, and my dude Bruce, who do you think was the standout? Now, I don't think any of them really lit the world on fire, but out of those three guys, who provided the most value?
To me, Bruce did, actually. You know, 0 points didn't really matter, though. I thought defensively he was able to kind of get into a couple of the Clippers players, help bring up that defensive effort. And I want to say he forced a steal on Paul George in this game, too. So I think some of that effort, he had some impact plays where Landry Shamet, I thought, you know, was okay, but there was a couple of plays in the fourth quarter where he pretty much gave up 4 points himself. One of them was a pass to Kawhi Leonard that was supposed to be for Kevin Durant. And then another play was he just got killed in the post. And instead of just giving up the bucket, he ended up fouling there. So it's just like, you know, Landry Shamet just has these moments where you're like, damn, man, like, instead of just making one mistake, you always make two. And TLC was not bad, not great, just kind of had an average TLC game, not his typical bipolar self. He wasn't extremely good or extremely bad.
Yeah, this is probably what you're going to see until there's some level of reinforcements, and whether the Nets do get those reinforcements in the buyout market or through some level of trade. It seems to me that the minutes load of what we saw tonight is what you're going to see against the best teams, and probably in the postseason as well. So it could be an indicator of things going forward.
You know, Jack, Bruce, do you think that Amon Shumpert could come in and take Landry Shamet's minutes?
I think that it's certainly a possibility, Nick. If Landry Shamet isn't hitting that three ball and he's providing defensive inconsistency, I thought he's been okay on that end of the floor overall for the season, but I do think that he can be a guy that can be exploited, like that play you mentioned where Paul George just bullied him in the post. And hey, he got a free throw off it, so I'm not sure what he's talking about, PG, in relation to not getting to the line. But yeah, also just dumb decisions. You know, you can't have two turnovers in 11 minutes when you only have the ball in your hand a certain modicum of the time. So I think it's a possibility, Nick. I'm not sure. I think I want to see Iman Shumpert out there when Bruce Brown isn't, because I think both of them are more offensive liabilities. So it'll be interesting to see how that balance is going forward and whether, you know, Shamet does take, is relegated out of the rotation, or TLC is as well. But, you know, I think Bruce Brown has, and he did have the most minutes out of those three as well, but I think he's earned that, because even when he's not impacting the box score, like you alluded to, he's still impacting the game defensively, and in an area where we do need. And if Iman Shumpert can do that, despite the fact that I do have my worries, and I did listen to you and Joe provide your analysis of the signing, I am somewhat warming to the idea, because, you know, Kyrie was a big advocate for the signing. As we've heard, those two are super duper close. You know, they were signed in the same year, in the same draft, sorry. So if it impacts Kyrie positively, if it holds, if it gives a level of accountability defensively, and provides a level of intangible energy similar to Bruce Brown, then I'm all for it. And again, the contract isn't totally guaranteed either. So that also gives me a level of comfort too. But I also do want there to be a legitimate guy that I'm confident in, whether it's a PJ Tucker that the Nets throw a heap of second rounders at, whether it's maybe JaVale McGee, I'm not totally comfortable with, but in saying that, I just think the Nets, one more guy would give do the world of good. But Iman Shumpert, he does need to clear those health and safety protocols, which will probably be the time I think we're versing the Sixers, which will probably be a good time to come back as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like you said, Jack, the whole contract situation, something to keep an eye on. And like I mentioned on the last show, I'm not super high in terms of what he can do on the court, but I think at least as a locker room presence and a chemistry guy, I think he can have an impact. And also just kind of calling out guys for defensive effort, because even if he's playing a few minutes, you know he's going to show the intensity. But like you said, he's not going to solve the problems the Nets have. Norvell Appel's not going to probably solve them either. You know, maybe he has a better chance because there's a little bit more upside there in terms of having an impact. But like you said, it needs to be a PJ Tucker or somebody else. Maybe, you know, Dallas, with all their struggles, they're looking to add something there. Who knows? But I think another wing defender would be ideal, especially someone to bring off the bench. Or like we've talked about a million times, maybe it's a simple buyout with Trevor Ariza.
Yeah, it's a wait and see proposition. The Nets certainly do need it, but you know, if they're going to perform this way against the Clippers and they can continue to rack up the W's against the best teams in the league, and the Nets have done it, you know, Sixers tick, Clippers tick, Bucks tick, Jazz tick. Those are the four best teams in the league right now to me, other than the Los Angeles Lakers. And I think the Nets can certainly give them a run for their money, but I'm intrigued to see that matchup. That's probably going to be the next big one. But we've got plenty of other games to be recapping. And the Nets can continue to play like this and improve their defensive communication, and KD keeps holding everyone accountable, then I'm confident with the Nets' chances going forward.
Yeah, like you said, Jack, I think currently right now the Nets are in the tier of contenders with all these teams, at least based off of what we see. And they have the ability, I think, to beat all these teams in a seven-game series. I don't think it's a lock. I think it's more of like a 50-50 type thing. But if they're able to make a couple of these moves that we hope they can make, they might be able to push themselves to the favorites or even be on the same level of the Lakers or something along those lines. I think there's enough room for them to boost themselves up another class if they're able to make some small additions.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, talking a bit more big picture in terms of the postseason, it turned into a half-court game. And yep, you've got three, maybe four, if you want to include a Joe Harris, and Jeff Green can get you a bucket every now and then. You know, the Nets might have the best half-court team in the league. Now, the Clippers and the Lakers, and the Nets are great in full court as well, in transition and on the fast break. You know, I think they're like fifth in,
I think the Nets just
well,
have the best offensive team in the league.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you want to look at the rating, then the Milwaukee Bucks would certainly be doing a lot of great things there. But I still don't totally believe in it because, yeah, I think, you know, while the Nets have offensive players, I don't think that they're defensive liability. You know, you look at Joe Harris, Kyrie Irving can be that, but he's not Bryn Forbes or Bobby Portis in that regard. So I'm confident that wherever the Nets finish in offense, it's going to be fine. It's the defense, as we sort of chatted about earlier, which is going to be fascinating to watch going forward, where that rating does end up, how it is against the better teams, you know, closing stretches of the game, the level of consistency, communication, help defense, switching defense, how much that is on. It's going to be a work in progress, Nick, but if we're getting the wins against the best teams, you know, it's certainly a good thing.
Yeah, 100%, Jack. And like our guy Kevin Durant said, we want to build these championship habits. And with every win against one of these great teams, you're doing that. And you just have to make sure you're doing it against the bad teams too. But Jack, anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
It's a Nets world, Nick, and the scary hours are upon us. Get scared, everybody.
It really was in the fourth quarter. I think Clipper fans would definitely tell you that. But as always, Jag, a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. Check us out on all streaming platforms.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.